the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. You know, it's fascinating when you see something happen in the media, and all of a sudden some things begin to come into clarity. One of those things has happened just in the last few months when an attack on large families has become something of an issue in the media. And I have drawn attention to this in an article I published at my website today at albertmohler.com entitled, "Put a Stop to Large Families?" Because that's exactly what some people are calling for. The most recent is Paul Ehrlich. And we're going to have a good time talking about this because this really gets to so many issues simultaneously. It's like this is the key issue that unlocks the door to walking in an entire collision of worldviews. Because you have Paul Ehrlich at Stanford University who comes out again in an interview at Salon.com this week suggesting that it ought to be not just considered wrong, but it should be illegal to have a large family for a couple to have several children. Now, the other person that kind of puts this issue on the map for us is perhaps a little bit unexpected, but it's Prince Philip of Great Britain, the Duke of Edinburgh, who has stuck his royal foot into his royal mouth, suggesting that, again, it ought to be considered wrong, if not illegal, for a family to have more than two children. Interesting, by the way, coming from a man with four, rather well known to us for all kinds of reasons. We'll be talking about this on the Albert Mohler Program. I want to suggest to you that this is a test for you. This is a heart test. This is a worldview test. There are all kinds of tests you could take. There are tests that show up you just have to take, such as voting for president. That's when you make that decision. It's a test of your worldview. You really find out the hierarchy of your concerns and priorities, and you find out what's important to you when you go in and you make that vote. There are other kinds of tests you have. When you can literally take a test in school, or they're measuring your knowledge. There's a test that comes when temptation comes, and you have to decide whether you're going to resist it or you're going to succumb to it and give in to it. There's a test that comes when a van with a family with several children pulls up in front of your church. Here's the test. Do you smile? Does that warm your heart? Or do you look at that and say, are those people nuts? This is what we're going to discuss today on the Albert Mohler Program, the collision of worldviews that comes over the simple issue of a large family. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. A little factoid here. This will play into our conversation later. If ecological issues are your concern, let me ask you, who is more ecologically lean, the large family or the small family? Well, it's the large family. Turns out that the smaller the number of children in the household, the less efficient the household is in terms of the use of energy. There's a little factoid to put into the conversation. We're going to have a lot to talk about in just a moment on the Albert Mohler Program, the collision of worldviews over the issue of the large family. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We'll get to that in just a moment. There's a lot of news going on across the country right now, and there's a lot of news going on around the world. Two stories in particular have my attention. The first has to do with Israel, where Tzipi Livni is now to be the new Israeli prime minister. This is really a big story because Ehud Olmert, who will be Ms. Livni's predecessor as prime minister and as head of Israel's ruling party, is a man who has been surrounded by controversy and charges of corruption. She has now been elected the leader of her party, and this is a huge, huge thing. Now, those of you who remember history of Israel, remember that Israel's had a woman prime minister before, Golda Meir, one of the most stalwart national leaders of any nation on earth, and a woman of rare courage when it came to leading her country during some of its most difficult times, a liberal leader in terms of domestic policies, but a very firm leader, as most Israeli prime ministers tend to be, on issues of national defense. The good guys won, said Ms. Livni, as she, surrounded by her supporters, declared victory. The Kadima Party has a new chairman. And this is a big deal, but we'll be waiting to see exactly how this comes about in terms of the transition between Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and the woman who is now slated to become Prime Minister, Tzipi Livni. The other story that has my attention in terms of the international scene is the story about tainted baby formula in China. Now, as we've been looking at this issue in China, it's been clear that several things are going on. And there's one angle on this that I think has something to say about government in a very particular way, about a government that is or is not accountable to its people. Now, it looks like 6,000 babies at a minimum are known to be ill because melamine that is used in the making of plastics, for instance, in dinnerware here in this country, was put in baby formula in an effort to make it look as if it had a greater percentage of protein. It turns out that this is, of course, a poison, that these babies have gotten ill, kidneys are shutting down in the infants, and at least three babies have died. The Chinese government has arrested, and this is the way the Chinese government responds, they have arrested the management of these factories. And I'm not suggesting that it's wrong to arrest the management of the factories. Let me tell you what's wrong. What's wrong is the Chinese government knew about this before the Olympics and refused to let the story come to the light of day because it would have been a national embarrassment during that time. And that's what's really interesting in this, because when you start to talk about government accountability, arresting people after the fact isn't good enough. If indeed there was an opportunity to save more babies during the time that the nation may have been more concerned about its reputation on the international scene because it was hosting the Olympics. You know, when you start the beginning words of the U.S. Constitution, we the people, that's only good so far as we the people make it stick. And this is the kind of thing that is unthinkable, or should be unthinkable, in any nation that wants international respect. I certainly hope that the Chinese government responds quickly in order to save as many of these babies as possible. It is interesting, I have to say, and it shows you some change in China, that there is such news coming out concerning this now. And perhaps that's a sign that in this internet age, the news will out. One way or another, it will get out. Newsweek magazine has a very fascinating report concerning television pioneering programming. That's the way it puts it. Now, here's the subtitle of the article by Joshua Alston, Newsweek magazine. The title is The New Transgender Reality. The subtitle is Reality Shows Have Long Pioneered Inclusive Casting. Now they're pushing the boundaries again. Now, just in order for you to get the thrill of this, so to speak, and understanding what Newsweek's excited about, let me read to you the opening paragraph of this article. It says this. In the second season of MTV's pioneering reality show, The Real World, the seven housemates played a game in which they anonymously asked each other personal questions to get better acquainted. It was going fine until Beth Anthony, who just so happened to be a lesbian, objected to the interest to the questions she was getting. Everyone was about her sexuality, not her background, interest, family, or education, just the fact that she happened to like women. 15 years have passed, and it's hard to imagine such a scene playing out on a modern reality show. Gays and lesbians have become a staple of reality show casts. But it goes on to say now that it's transgendered persons who are going to be a staple of reality show casts. Here's the next paragraph. The lead, VH1's new show, I Want to Work for Diddy, and CW's America's Next Top Model, now in its 11th season, both feature transgender women. Isis Tsunami on Model and Laverne Cox on Diddy. It's very interesting here. It looks like Newsweek magazine is simply saying, deal with it, America. This is how the changing mores and the changing values of the civilization become apparent. Reality TV is a shadow of reality. That's the argument. And even as homosexuals in the past, gays and lesbians and now transgender persons are becoming staple characters on reality shows, you should expect that this means they will be staple characters in terms of American life. Now, you can do with this what you will, but it tells us a great deal, not only about the changes in the culture, because after all, this might be accurate. I mean, let's face the fact that this analysis might be accurate. It might be accurate because, as Newsweek says, reality shows have done a lot to spark conversations about sexuality, to make gays and lesbians seem less weird and exotic, to introduce out and proud gays and lesbians to people who might never have met them otherwise. Here's the next sentence. By casting transgender people, reality shows put themselves in a position to have that effect again. Sure, there has been scripted fare about the topic, but reality TV has a more transformative effect. I said there's a lot to think about here. First of all, there's the whole point of the impact of television. You know, we talk about television as if it's about information and entertainment, but a more sophisticated analysis of the culture indicates that television is itself an engine of social change, and it always has been. Perhaps not always as some people had intended, but it always has been. an engine of social change. It tells us also something about the more elite media as they consider themselves the print media looking at television. Now Newsweek acknowledging that maybe it's television that has this effect. But Newsweek appears to be quite happy about it and is celebrating, in effect, the change that reality TV might bring in America's reality. Back to talk about the question of the worldview clash over the picture of the large family. Should large families be banned, made illegal? It's a good topic for our conversation. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Just consider this picture, a couple with several children, not only two or three, but maybe four, five, six, seven, eight, nine children, large number of children show up at church. The van stops, the doors open, and out pour the kids. Now, when you're looking at this, and I'm putting it in the context of a church because this gets to where so many listeners of this program really live. When you see that, does your heart go glad? Do you look at that picture and say, no, that's really a wonderful picture of the kingdom of God right there. There's a picture of God's blessing. Or do you look at that and say, do those people not know how to use birth control? I mean, because that's really a worldview clash going on right now. And even though it's going on at some level in terms of seeing a van like that pull up a church, it's going on at a far larger level in the international scene, where in the larger world, the picture of the big family is becoming the picture of the enemy rather than the picture of the friend. The picture of a burden rather than the picture of a blessing in the minds of very many people around the world, and including some who are in a position to make policy. I wrote about it today at my website at albertmueller.com. The article is entitled, Put a Stop to Large Families? And the reason for the article today is the intersection of at least two recent proposals put forth by people who have entree to the world stage to try to make the case that there ought to be a ban, a halt, to large families. Few comments reveal as much about our times as comments about family size. Those with even the slightest historical awareness would know that large families were the norm throughout human history, and for good reason. In the Bible, large families are seen as a sign of God's blessing, and children are celebrated as God's gifts. Only with the development of modern birth control and the transformations of values and worldviews that followed does any other view of larger families make sense. The pill changed everything, we might now understand. In addition, concerns about human overpopulation and an ecological crisis led some to see large families as expensive and inefficient hobbies, or worse. Social planners held out the example of the two-child family, and some ideologues wanted to define normal as one child per couple. By the early 21st century, reproduction rates are falling around the world. Some European nations are facing a demographic crisis of low birth rates, and not a single major European nation is reproducing at even the replacement rate. So there you have it. In other words, the message has gotten out, the message about the burden of large families. Whether it's because women have gone into the workplace or people have higher economic aspirations or whether they just feel like they don't want to contribute to a perceived ecological crisis, the number of children per couple has been in a free fall over the last 50 years. Now, it's really interesting. In the span of just a few months, two major figures have now called for putting a stop to large families. And at least one of them has called for making large families illegal. That's his word for it. And you're going to hear it from his own mouth. But here you have the Duke of Edinburgh, Britain's Prince Philip. In an interview broadcast on British television, the husband of Queen Elizabeth II spoke his mind on a number of issues, including family size, and he said this, or at least this is the quotation from The Times, which is the most establishment of the London newspapers. It said this, Prince Philip emerges in a television interview this week as the model royal eco-warrior who believes overpopulation has contributed to the pressures on the world and that anyone who believes in God should go green. Now, here's the next sentence. You got to listen to this carefully. The Duke hints that curbing family sizes may be the best means of keeping the soaring cost of staple food products, such as bread and rice, in check. Now, arguments deserve the respect they deserve. This argument deserves no respect. It's, as I said in my article today, stunningly stupid. to come out with the argument that the problem is not too little food, but too many people, you have to assume that there's a fixed number for the right amount of food or a fixed number for the right amount of people. I guarantee you that you will not find written anywhere an objective number that says the right amount of food in Great Britain or the world is this, the right amount of human beings is that. In other words, this is a complete dodge. The simple math is that if there were more food, there would be just the right number of people. Does he say that there were too few people, it would be the inevitable result of having too much food? In other words, this is an argument that is tailor-made for someone trying to act seriously when he has no serious idea of what he's talking about. But he does have entree to the media. And the Duke of Edinburgh is giving an interview here, and just taking his argument at face value, he says we need to curb family size. Now, he says this, and let me quote him again. He says, everyone thinks it's to do, that's the crisis, everyone thinks it's to do with not enough food, but it's really that demand is too great, too many people. Basically, it's a little embarrassing for everybody. Now, this is the Duke speaking here. He says, no one quite knows how to handle it. Nobody wants their family life to be interfered with by the government, end quote. Well, that is the best sentence in everything he had to say. That's true. No one wants to have their family life to be interfered with by the government. Now, you would think that at least the Duke would have acknowledged, as he's calling for no more than two children per family, that he and his wife, the Queen, have four. But nonetheless, he doesn't acknowledge that. It is amazingly ridiculous to look at a statement like this. And let's face it, Prince Philip would not be in the news as an expert in any area. He is simply in the news because he's a member of the British royal family. But it's another illustration of the fact that in the elites of the culture, and in this case British culture, but we could call it Anglo-American culture, the sight of a large family is simply embarrassing. And if you wonder about that, just let me suggest to you this. Let me suggest to you that you imagine Harvard Yard. And here comes the little foreign job, and the doors open, and out come the two parents for Parents' Day, and maybe one little sister coming to visit brother at Harvard, or one little brother coming to visit sister at Harvard. You know, well, that's a picture everybody understands. And then along comes another car. It's a Beamer, and it drives up, and, you know, out come parents to see their only child. All that's understood. That would make sense. All right, here comes the Ford Econo van. Parking there at Harvard Yard, the door opens, out come three brothers and four sisters, the soccer ball, the football, the frisbee, and here comes happy siblings across Harvard Yard to greet the big family. The institution is aghast. This just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. I mean, you do not have, you know, family planned dinners in Manhattan like this, in terms of, encouraging and recognizing large families. Hollywood makes of it a spectacle. Eight is enough. But even that was a very long time ago. In order to get up to large numbers of children, you have to have the blended family in Hollywood. And that's the only way you get to having several children, usually under one roof. And yet, you know, the animus against large families is not only there with Prince Philip and with some of the elites. It's found elsewhere as well, and sometimes even closer to home than we would like to admit. The second figure that has warned against large families is Paul Ehrlich, who's the author of the scaremongering 1968 bestseller, The Population Bomb. And at the online magazine Salot.com, Paul Ehrlich made the argument that large families ought to be not only considered immoral, but illegal. Let me just tell you, his words are this. He says, I believe it is immoral and should be illegal for people to have very large numbers of children because they are then co-opting for themselves and their children resources that should be spread elsewhere in the world. You only get a chance to get your fair share. Well, we'll find out what Paul Ehrlich is talking about your fair share, in just a moment. We'll also find out that when it comes to predicting the future, this is one man who has said a very great deal, and all of it spectacularly wrong. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. This is a guy that said there were even chances that London wouldn't even exist in the year 2000. I think we can take it that it does. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. I think this issue of controversy over large families really is connected to so many other questions. It's connected to what we think about marriage and sex and reproduction and family and children. It's connected to what we think about the sanctity of human life and the glory of God in humanity. It's connected to what we think about when we think about the ecological crisis. And I'm not denying that there is an ecological crisis. I'm not denying that there is a challenge in terms of even understanding how we are to meet the challenge of a world of growing population and perhaps the scarcity of resources. I don't deny that that's a problem. I just deny that large families are the problem. And I deny that seeing large families as the problem is in any way compatible with the basic Christian principles of understanding the gift of marriage, the gift of children, and all the rest. I'm not calling for the normativity of families maximizing the number of children they can have. I think that would be a misunderstanding of the argument. I am saying that when you have people come out and say that large families ought to be made illegal, we better take notice. And when this is coming from someone at Stanford University, this isn't coming from some crank with a little internet set up, just putting this out on a blog that says stop large families. This is someone who is at Stanford University, and I mentioned his name earlier, Paul Ehrlich, and he did write the 1968 bestseller, The Population Bomb, and I have a copy of it, and it's red binding in my library, and it's a fascinating thing because it is a scaremongering book. Back in the late 1960s, he warned about the fall and collapse of civilizations itself. For instance, he made arguments such as this, predictions not only in the book The Population Bomb in 1968 but beyond. I wrote about this in my article. It's just amazing anyone takes him seriously, but the ideological left still does, and it does so because he tells them what they want to hear. But he's been wrong time and time again, and I don't mean just a little bit wrong. I mean, for instance, this is a man who in the 1960s predicted mass starvation around the world that would threaten the existence of humanity within the next 10 years. It didn't happen. In the 1970s, he warned that within the next decade, all the major species in the oceans would be dead. They weren't. He warned that great smog attacks in New York City would kill hundreds of thousands in the city in the year 1973. It didn't happen. He once predicted there was a good chance that London would not even exist in the year 2000. Well, as I wrote in my article, given the fact that we had the interview with Prince Philip, I guess we can assume that London still exists. This is a man who has stuck his neck out. And by the way, in this interview at Salon.com, it's not just with Paul Ehrlich. It is also with several other people who are involved in population research. One of them is Matthew Connolly, we had on this program. And, he confronted Paul Ehrlich by saying that Ehrlich's warnings are all future-based. And he says you can't do social science looking to the future. The future is not yet evidence for social science. Paul Ehrlich came back and he said, yes, you can, and I must. Well, again, that might have slightly more credibility coming from someone who had at least been once right about what the future was supposed to hold rather than so spectacularly and consistently wrong on these big questions. But this is what Paul Ehrlich had to say. I want you again to hear the full quote taken from this interview. He said, I believe it is immoral and should be illegal for people to have very large numbers of children because they are then co-opting for themselves and their children resources that should be spread elsewhere in the world. You only get a chance to get your fair share. Now, just to cut to the bottom line of Paul Ehrlich's worldview, he even found good things to say about China's one-child-only policy. Now, just to recall, this is China's policy that makes it illegal to have more than one child. This has led to some of the most amazing human rights abuses in human history. It's led, because of the preference for male babies, to the infanticide and abortion of millions and millions and millions of girls born and unborn. It has led to an imbalance in the population there, to where there are far more males than females, and thus there are millions of young Chinese males who have no hope of marriage whatsoever because the girls simply don't exist. But he said about China, and let me quote him again, he said, the Chinese government, by the way, is the only government that has connected population numbers to global warming and pointed out how much they have saved in the way of CO2 emissions by their family planning policy. All right, folks, I just want to ask you, do you have anything to say about this? I mean, do you believe that you can come up with a defense for large families, or Are you just going to surrender and say, well, maybe these talking heads know what they're talking about? Now, I'm going to suggest to you that when you see this kind of thing happen in the media, and when you have headlines coming from Prince Philip and from Paul Ehrlich, and let's admit it, with Prince Philip, you're talking about someone who probably is not going to be taken too seriously at the policy level. His tape is revealing for what it says about the part of the society that he inhabits. But when it comes to Paul Ehrlich, he's writing from Stanford University, suggesting not merely that there ought to be some kind of social sanction against large families, but that it ought to be made illegal. He came back later and said, maybe you just put on very high taxes of families with large children, and that would solve the problem. I want to know what you think. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Give me a call at 877-893-TALK on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Here's the policy question. Are you ready for someone to tell you how many children you can have? We're not just talking about the kind of social planning that comes, which is insidious enough. The social planning that says, here's what we should consider to be the optimal number of children for all families. But what about when it comes packaged in a more coercive form? When, for instance, you have Paul Ehrlich at Stanford University who says it ought to be considered immoral and should be made illegal for couples to have very large numbers of children. What do you do with that? Then Paul Ehrlich comes back and says, well, maybe you don't make it illegal. Maybe you make it coercive by raising taxes so much on large families that you make it virtually impossible for them to make it. Now, let me just tell you that on that last score, I don't think there's much chance that's going to happen. But to the larger question, I could see a scenario in which people try to come up with an argument for limiting family size by not so much legal coercion here in the United States. I don't believe the American people would yet put up with that, but rather by force of social sanction. And I think that's happening already. I'd love to know what you're thinking about this. Are you ready for the government to tell you how many children to have? The number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Not only are you ready for the government to tell you how many children you should have, are you ready for any institutional authority, any organization, any professor at, say, Stanford University to tell you? Now, you start looking at this, and you wonder where the numbers come from. For instance, how do you come up with two? Well, it's because the replacement rate for most population right now is slightly over two. So if most couples are having two, then you're keeping somewhat of a population stability. But even Paul Ehrlich knows that that isn't evenly distributed, and so he's perfectly happy with it being not two but one when it comes to the number of children. And he speaks positively of China's one-child-only policy, which is to me just immoral and unthinkable. Paul Ehrlich wants to make it immoral to have large numbers of children. I want to make it immoral to talk this way. I want to bring social sanction against anyone who would speak this way. This isn't just a left-right issue, although it is largely a left-right issue. It's not just a blue-red state issue, but it's largely a blue-red state issue. For instance, if you look at some of the results from the electoral votes of years past, presidential elections, you will note that where people have looked at family size and family context, people from large families are more likely to be conservative than people from smaller families. Is there a reason for that? Well, maybe there are certain values inculcated in a larger family that are more amenable to a conservative understanding of reality, of morality, of authority. It's at least an argument worth tracing. When you start looking at large families, they are religiously concentrated, no doubt about it. And so you can look at different studies and put them all together. And the groups that, for instance, are most likely to have plural numbers of children over two are, for instance, traditional Catholics, evangelical Christians, and Mormons. That's just an example in this country. But, of course, worldwide, you have to add to that a group that is far out-populating, out-reproducing, we should say, almost any group in North America in terms of dominance, and that would be Muslims. And so in areas of the world which are Muslim-dominated, you have higher birth rates. Still falling, and that's one of the things that Matthew Connelly talks about in his book, where he points out that families actually make decisions that appear rational to them. And so his response to Paul Ehrlich's call for coercion is to say, not only that it's wrong, I'm glad he does make that statement, and he's bold to say that, but that it's unnecessary because it turns out that couples do make rational decisions concerning the number of children they need. In some situations, it's perfectly rational to believe that they need larger numbers of children. If, for instance, you're in a subsistence economy where you need children eventually to grow up and to work in the family business, that makes sense. But as economic situations change, Matthew Connelly points out the fact that the parental decisions change. But all of that just assumes that someone should be telling someone else how many children to have. And that's the bottom line here. I think the baseline immorality of this, and what should be shocking to people, is that there are people ready to tell you how many children you should have. I think, and I've been as clear about this as I know to be, I think we need to be very clear about the biblical worldview's prejudice toward children. Seeing children as God's blessing, honoring the full quiver, as you find in the Old Testament metaphor, for a father and mother with a large number of children. I think we should honor those who have large families. We might even be envious of them, those who do not have so many. We can recognize they have particular burdens, particular responsibilities, that they've got a different dynamic in their family. Their nest is empty later than other nests. But there is a great deal of joy and happiness in those large families. And there is a receptivity of children as the gift of God that is pictured in those large families that become a blessing to the whole. And I'm thinking here of the local church. The local congregation should consider the blessing that comes into the life of the church through these pictures of what it means to gladly receive children, to rejoice in children, and to rejoice in the gift of family. Let's remember that in the biblical worldview, the family is itself a little civilization. And then that little civilization is populated by those who are related by blood and kinship and adoption. And in the right ordering of that little civilization is the glory of God. And we should rejoice in that. We should honor that. And I'm not telling families, here is the exact number of children you should have. I am criticizing others for doing that. I'm not doing that myself. I'm saying that we should honor those who make the decision to have children. Not only should we not bring sanction against them, not only should we be concerned when someone wants to make large families illegal, we've got to confront the argument that it's immoral. And the moment we begin to talk about human beings as burdens upon the planet, we have turned the biblical worldview on its head. That is not to deny an ecological responsibility. That is not to deny a challenge of coming up with an adequate way of resourcing a growing population. That isn't to say we don't have a responsibility to try to figure out how we can, not only on a local basis and a national basis, but on an international basis, think about a more fair distribution of what are limited resources. It does mean that turning on the family as the problem and seeing children as a burden rather than as a blessing is itself a sign of a deep theological and spiritual sickness. We might expect to see that in the secular world, but we had really better be shocked and troubled to see it in the Christian world. We're the people who are obligated to the biblical worldview. We should find not only peace of mind there, but happiness of heart as well. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. USA Today is out with an interesting article today. The title is How Different Faiths View Major Issues. This is Baylor University's newest survey on America's religious beliefs and practices. It's released today based on interviews with 1,700 adults conducted in the fall of 2007. On the environment, this is what it says. Most respondents to the Baylor U Religion Survey agree that if we do not change things dramatically, global climate change will be a disaster. But according to the article, evangelical Protestants are significantly less likely, that's 55%, than other religious groups to be alarmed about global climate change. But it turns out that evangelicals are at least twice as likely to as any other religious movement to say that government's already spending too much on some of these things. That's fascinating to look at. on women suited for politics. And again, this came up long before Sarah Palin was a name known to most Americans. This survey was done in the fall of last year. It says that Americans reveal deep divisions over women's roles in society. 33% of Americans say, quote, most men are better suited emotionally for politics than most women, end quote. 44% of evangelical Protestants agree. That's higher than other Christians and markedly higher than, for instance, Jewish persons and persons who marked no religion. Dealing with evil, another question that came up in the Saddleback Civil Forum on the presidency. 43% of Americans, that is adults who are here, say most evil is caused by the devil. 47% disagree. That's really interesting. Now, let me tell you what's even more interesting than the numbers that are here, and that is that someone thinks that these issues can be reduced to numbers. You look at this, and here's USA Today devoting most of a page to this. And I just want to point out the limited utility of these surveys. The surveys often tell you more about the person asking the questions than the person answering the questions. Not only that, but even if these numbers turn out to be true, and you talk to 1,700 representative adults across the United States, if you ask these questions sometimes in a slightly different way, you get a remarkably different answer. You know, this is no substitute for conversation. In other words, just coming through this kind of statistical survey, marking off the kinds of things in a poll, that is no substitute for actually having a conversation with your neighbors about these things. If you want to find out what they think, don't go and look at some statistical abstract or don't hire a pollster. Why don't you have a conversation with them? If you want to find out what Americans are thinking, maybe we need to be, well, informed by these surveys, yes, but not in such a way that we think they actually reveal to us the contours of belief and conviction and worldview in this country. That's going to take some conversation, and I just want to encourage Christians to be in conversation with non-Christians on these issues. You'll really find out what people believe. You will also find out what you believe. You'll find the challenge of communicating what you believe to people who do not share the same worldview. And along the way, you're going to find some opportunities to share the gospel, which explains why you believe what you believe. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.